Hey, last talk of the day. Thanks for being in the room with me. I'm going to go quick. I somewhat promised live demos. I'm not going to do live demos because we do not have time. But real quick before I get started, raise your hand if you've used TCP dump as a tool. Raise your hand if you actually ran into a networking problem that it did not solve and you were mystified by. Other than DNS, something was actually in your server. Okay, raise your hand if you've actually heard about Packet Where Are You as a tool. Okay, this talk is not for you people. This talk is for everyone else in the room. So, I'm just a user. I am not an engineer. I don't write the code, but I break things really well. And in fact, I've done a lot of breaking of things on my own systems, learning how to write eBPF for myself. And this tool is a godsend for pretty much any time you're working with eBPF in your networking stack and you're making mistakes. I'm going to give a quick overview in this talk of what the tool is and how it makes use of eBPF very high level because it's not your traditional eBPF networking tool, or I should say program. And there will no live demos this time. I just have some slides that capture key findings from things I did 3 nights ago. So, what exactly is the problem? Linux networking is complicated. It gets more complicated when you introduce network namespaces, otherwise known as containers, right? When a packet goes missing, how do you know where in the Linux networking stack it went, right? You have netfilter, but it only knows about netfilter. And then once you add eBPF programs and XDP programs, how do you know? How do you know what you don't know? This is not a joke. We think it's a joke. It's not a joke. I believe in ghosts. So this is where Packet Where Are You comes in. It is maintained as a networking diagnostic tool as part of the Cilium project. It has its own repo because Cilium is an eBPF networking solution, and there were no tools that could diagnose problems associated with it as it's being written. Linux Network Tracing Program, based on Golang, it uses PCAP filtering semantics, so you can do things similar to how you used to do them with TCP dump. And it uses K-probes to instrument the Linux functions that your packets are flowing through. So why eBPF and not classic BPF? Because PCAP actually uses classic BPF and actually attaches its filters to the devices in the network stack. The big win here with going to eBPF is the fact that you get access to maps that can hold state and share that state with a user space program, and that provides some interesting, powerful capabilities when you're trying to trace packets that flow through your kernel. And when I say flow through your kernel, we have to make use of K-probes here, or it makes use of K-probes here because it can actually attach to basically every kernel function. I think when I run this without doing any kernel function regular expressions to narrow it down, it's like 1,500 trace points that it actually attaches. So that's where the packets could go. So K-probes are basically a debugging implementation that was added to the kernel, and one of the types of handlers you can attach to are eBPF programs. So that's what gets used here by Packet Where Are You. There's a really great write-up on Linux Weekly News that really talks about K-probes, well, not just K-probes, but like all of the kernel tracing options you have. K-probes is just one of them. So is Packet Where Are You a kernel tracing program or is it a network tracing program? It is both of those things because at this point, no, network is kernel. You can't avoid it. There's so much going on in the Linux kernel, especially if you start doing things with containers. And what's great about this is that as network operators, network engineers, you don't necessarily need to know how to fix the kernel problems if you run into them, but this tool will at least let you identify where they're happening. So you're not just staring blankly across the room or across a video call with a kernel engineer, and you're both mad at each other because you don't have enough specificity about the problem. So what I think makes Packet Where Are You special is the fact that it actually takes the exact same PCAP filter semantics that you're used to from TCP dump and makes use of them here. And it does that in a pretty clever way. It actually takes, it compiles the classic BPF programs and is able to translate them into eBPF and inject them into the K-probe as additional instructions at runtime. And I think that is sort of a bit of technical magic. The other great thing is actually hard for packets to go missing, even though you've provided a PCAP filter that says, you know, track packets that are meant for destination port 80. If you mangle a packet in the kernel somewhere and you end up with port 8080, like TCP dump loses track of it, right? But because we can actually do state handling with those eBPF maps, you can keep track of that packet and watch it flow further into the kernel. So you can see exactly which function call changed your port number, which is great if you are watching port numbers change and you have no idea what's going on. It's built with containers in mind, and that this is the problem space it was built to solve, because Cilium, the parent project, is all about container CNI, and I think it was like three talks ago, we had the overview of Kubernetes, and we talked about CNI and the fact that there's a pod network or the service network. Super complicated. It's all happening inside of a Linux box, right? It's all inside the Linux kernel, and once you move past kubeproxy, you're no longer writing netfilter or IP tables rules, and you move to something like Cilium, which is all eBPF, this is a super handy diagnostic if things have gone corner case on you. Like I said, you got to really think about it as TCP dump, but for your Linux kernel. Once you know the packets are coming in to a device and it's still not behaving well, this is what you want to pick up and use so you can diagnose further. So it's demo time, but I'm not going to do live demos. I'm just going to show you. So this is a baseline demo that just shows you when everything's working as expected. I'm starting out with just a couple of allow rules for SSH and a port, a standard HTTP server. And I'm just doing a simple curl from a client. So real quick at the top is just the curl command, right? I have what I'm using for my TCP dump command and what I'm using for my packet where are you command. And more importantly, they're using the same PCAP filters. I'm looking at a source address and a destination port on the host, on the server host. So, and when I actually run the curl command, you see TCP sees the packets come in, and at the bottom here, packet where are you sees that the kernel events go through all these kernel functions. It's a lot of output, and most of it you will never care about, but sometimes you do, right? So, most importantly, or not importantly, but an interesting aside is this will actually catch kernel functions associated with applications working with the socket buffers associated with each packet. So here I have Nginx actually consumed the packet, right? So it made like a copy of the socket buffer, and then the kernel ends up closing that socket buffer later. Packet where are you catches that stuff too. So it's not just for the in-kernel processing. You'll see information about applications dealing with the socket buffers too. So that's baseline. That's the basic value or the output of packet where are you. But let's see what happens when I do this. But I had tracing rules, and I try to access port 90, which shouldn't be allowed. So here, in this case, I actually the NF table trace will come back and say, hey, there's a drop. Good, it's what I expect because I have a rule there. Packet where are you also catches this with a kernel function reason pointing to the fact that netfilter dropped. So that's self-consistent, great. But what happens when netfilter isn't the cause? So the less happy demo, here we have a situation where netfilters is silent on the issue, but I've disrupted the communication in some other means. So here we see TCP dump sees the packets arrive, and then packet where are you actually sees that the reason is because of my reverse path filter fired. I didn't realize that reverse path filtering was actually on by default on this host. And what I did was I actually put a black hole rule in, just a simple IP black hole for the client. And you wouldn't think that would catch ingress, but it does with the reverse packet filtering. So that's completely sort of otherwise silent. That filter has no idea what's going on there. So that's sort of less likely to happen, or not as problematic, because I black holed it, right? So I don't really care about ingress. But here's a situation where I've disrupted a different way. And this time, the reason from packet where are you says that it's a traffic control ingress filter right here. It actually sees the call to traffic control classify, and then there's an unnamed address. That's actually an eBPF program address that is caught. So, and in this situation, I actually have a eBPF program that I've put in that does a direct action of just dropping the packets from the client. And again, this net filter has no idea that this exists, so you can't see it with a net filter trace. So one last example, in this scenario, and this relates back to talking about tracing past the PCAP filter that you would have normally, I'm getting a deny from net filter that says port 8080, because I should be denying that, but I'm actually sending packets over the server on port 80. So, you know, TCP dump says the packets are coming in on port 80. Packet where are you catches the fact that there's an eBPF function, and the eBPF function is doing some calls and actually changing the port number. And then eventually that will result in a packet reason of net filter that corresponds with the drop that net filter is doing. So I've mangled a packet a little bit. But because I'm using packet where are you, I can actually still track the fact that socket buffer related to that network packet, its data has changed, but I'm just tracking the address, right? And so I'm able to use the eBPF maps or to keep track of that packet, even though I've changed the original matching conditions. And I think that's a bit of magic. And it's super valuable. In fact, there's a blog post on the Cilium website where someone did this in anger on a real issue, not an eBPF program. It was ended up being a Linux bug in like the masquerading code where it was a corner case and it was changing the IP address out from under them, and they had no idea what was going on. They thought it was IP tables, right? Because everyone thinks it's IP tables at that point, but it wasn't. And the only way they saw it was they were able to look in to the kernel functions, which is really, really great. So some practical information about how I ran packet where are you, because I know everyone here is going to do it when they go home after they've had a couple of drinks. I used the filter trace TC option that actually lets me trace that BBPF program. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to trace past that point. And I used the track SKB option, which makes use of that tracking capability. It's extra eBPF programs that are added. So there's some overhead here. That's why it's not by default. But it's super valuable when you have no idea what's going on. So the other thing, I was using the output tuple output in those slides, which highlights the L3, L4 information about address and port. There's also the option you can look at the SKB metadata that gives you information about, I think, the protocol and the firewall mark, if you're using marking in your firewall rules, and the MTU and the interface. So for more problematic manipulations that can be done to the packets. And then there's a timestamp option. I didn't put in this output because it expands the columns a little bit. But you get some timestamping. I love the relative because it timestamps the steps based on the first time the address is seen. So it gives you a little more information about flow order. So there's a couple of caveats, right? This is does impact performance. It is a diagnostic tool. You can't just leave this running because it's putting in a ton of K probes. On the CentOS box I was running from my demos, it takes a couple of minutes to actually initialize and tear down those K probes. In newer kernels, this is significantly reduced in terms of performance costs and in terms of time, because there's a new kernel facility in the new kernels that lets you attach K probes in batches, so you don't have to do them one at a time serially. So keep that in mind. If you start playing with this, start with something new. It'll be a more less frustrating experience as you're getting used to this as a tool. And then the big drawback right now is I can't do XDB program tracing yet. I actually try to do an XDB filter, and it just doesn't see it. But you know, it's an open source project, so patches are welcome. I do actually think there's not a PR, but there is an issue open exactly to make that happen. So wrap up. I took less than 15 minutes, so I'm thankful. So this is a great tool. I actually think of it as a DevOps tool. This is a great tool for network operators so they can talk to Linux kernel developers and with some specifics about things that are going wrong inside the Linux networking stack. And I use that expansively, including eBPF developers who are injecting new capabilities into your Linux kernel. Because you're not always the same person. In fact, it's very rare that you're going to be the same person. So I think this tool is great to put in your toolbox if you are doing any network operations using Linux, especially if you're doing Kubernetes cluster work and you start running into intermittent network problems or that you can't work around. So I think I have time for questions.
Question?
He has one.
Did you happen to measure how much it impacts performance, for example, on a 10 gig line or something?
I haven't measured. I'm just happy it's able to do what it does. I haven't measured performance. I don't think anyone who's working with it is. It's expected to be performant. This is a pretty big hammer for your mystifying problems. So,
anyone else? Okay, this one.
Hi. When you use it yourself, do you use it on your local machine, or is it quite easy to use on a public cloud cluster that you have created yourself?
I normally use it on VMs and testing environments because I am constantly breaking things. But I think Quentin can answer that specifically.
Hi. So for Selenium, we've been using sometimes Beru to debug the CI on GitHub runners. So the way you do that is that you have an option to tell Peru to open a file when it's ready once all the probes are attached, and then you can start your networking workflow and you kill the process when you're done. And it's relatively easy to implement.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, and see you next year.